Blog Talk Radio.
County, right here in Union City, Insider NJ proudly brings to you Politically Direct, and I am the professor, Fernando Uribe. I welcome you all here tonight, the 10th of May, the year 2018, folks, and as we're starting to see some warmer weather throughout the Garden State, let's hope it's here to stay. Of course, I want to thank you all for listening from wherever you are here throughout the great state of New Jersey and, of course, throughout the good old U.S. of A. You can always write the show's box, ladies and gentlemen, which is politicallydirectnj at yahoo.com. Once again, politicallydirectnj at yahoo.com. If you have any questions or feedback about the show, any guests you'd like to have here in future episodes, again, write to me. I love to get email. I love to answer all the fan mail, and I love all the feedback, whether it's positive or negative. Actually, it's been much more positive than anything lately. And for some time now with the show, so I appreciate that. Again, write to me, politicallydirectnj at yahoo.com. And don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at politicallydirectnj. You can also follow me directly on Instagram at your_favorite_Fernando. Of course, you can also follow me on Twitter at Fernando Uribe Jr. For all of you Facebook subscribers, I ask you to just take a moment. Please go to the official page for Politically Direct. Like it, of course, and I ask you to tell your friends to do the same. I do want to hear from you tonight, folks, so don't be shy. Call me toll-free, 818-572-8032. Once again, 818-572-8032. And our toll-free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. Now, don't forget to check out Insider NJ, folks, by going to www.insidernj.com for the best coverage of the entire political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. You can't go wrong. Again, www.insidernj.com. Once you go on the main page, you can click absolutely for free and subscribe to the Morning Intelligence Briefing that will be delivered conveniently every single morning to your inbox, and you can read it on your smartphone, your tablet, your PC, or your Mac when you're having breakfast. Maybe you're on the treadmill. Whatever it is you're doing in the morning, started off with the Morning Intelligence Briefing. It's the absolute best coverage of everything that's going on, whether it's in Trenton, under the Golden Dome, in the governor's office, or without, or even throughout, excuse me, the 21 counties here in the Garden State. Believe me, no one does it better than Insider NJ. www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to start your day with Insider NJ. Now, the opinions and views expressed tonight and every week on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those, I repeat, they do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, or the staff. Folks, again, I hope you all have a wonderful start to the month of May. We're having some great weather. Just in advance, I want to wish a very happy Mother's Day to all the moms listening out there tonight. Certainly, I hope that you'll have a great one this Sunday. I think the weather will cooperate. So, hey, for that mom in your life, whether it's your wife, your mom, your sister, cousins, aunt, whatever it is, colleagues, friends, make sure to wish all the moms out there a very happy Mother's Day this Sunday. So I'm doing it in advance right now. Again, Mother's Day really should be every day for everything that they do for us. All right, folks, again, 818-572-8032. Toll-free number tonight to call in. Again, and toll-free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. And I like to start off the show, folks, as I do every single week here with the first shot. Folks, again, you know, June 30th is quickly approaching. And for those of you that are political junkies like myself, you know that the budget has to be ratified and has to be signed into law by Governor Murphy before the 30th of June, which is the end of the fiscal year. Now, should it not be signed into law before midnight June 30th, consequently, what we'll have is another state shutdown at 12:01 a.m. on July 1st. We certainly want to avoid that. And, of course, you know, with a legislature controlled by the Democratic Party in both chambers and, of course, a Democrat in the governor's office, that seems very unlikely to happen. But you never know. And based on what we're seeing with some budget figures, it can be very interesting in the sense of what's going on right now. Now, again, folks, you know, a lot of New Jerseyans are concerned about the direction that Governor Murphy will be taking us on financially. And it's kind of interesting, you know, hearing the governor of Texas, Governor Abbott, who I'm a big fan of. I mean, I'm a big fan of the state of Texas anyway, for multiple reasons. For those of you that know me, know I'm a devoted member of Cowboys Nation. I love my Dallas Cowboys, and I love the state of Texas. And more importantly, you know, I love a lot of what Texas represents. You know, no state income tax, a prosperous state economy, certainly competent governance there, both in the legislature and also in the governor's office in Texas. And it was interesting to me to see Governor Abbott take a shot at New Jersey and Governor Murphy in the sense of what's going on here in New Jersey and how it's becoming much more expensive for New Jerseyans to even stay here. Now, again, for those of you, and you've heard, again, as I've said to you before, you've heard here on this program, whether it's with recent guests or even monologues, what I've been doing here on the show is just to be fair and consistent and to talk about really the idea that, you know, a lot of New Jerseyans, homeowners and taxpayers like myself are concerned. We're concerned about what's going on in terms of the governor pledging to, you know, drive up taxes and somehow under the sort of the perception that it's to help close deficits and to, you know, try to get us back into prosperity. And again, for those of you that aren't aware, again, I know the governor has proposed a 7% levy on retail sales, again, sort of raising the sales tax back to 7%. Now, again, folks, for those of you that don't know, I mean that's tied to the second highest rate among the states, and it's going to be up from the current 6.625%. Now, if you remember, that was the compromise with the introduction of the gas tax last year, actually at the end of 2016, if I'm not mistaken. And certainly, you know, a lot of New Jerseyans are going to feel that crunch. Of course, high income earners, for example, in New Jersey, would see their state income tax rate increase from, increase to 10.75%. Now, that's the third highest in the country from the current rate of 8.97%. I know that Governor Murphy has also been proposing new taxes on ride-sharing services like Ubers and Lyfts, which I know a lot of us depend on, and also home-sharing sites like Airbnb, and, of course, an investment profits. And also one of his big campaign promises was to push for the legalization of recreational marijuana and certainly being able to tax the sales of legal marijuana here in New Jersey. And, you know, one of the things that the Office of Legislative Services has gone to say that the governor's projection of a corporate business tax revenue is supposed to be more than $200 million, and that might be a little bit too high in terms of what the estimates are. And, you know, one of the things that I find very interesting in the sense of, again, the budget would take effect on July 1st. Now, one of the things that I think people are not taking into account is the fact is that New Jersey State Senate President Steve Sweeney, out of the 3rd Legislative District, which is down in the southwestern part of New Jersey, pretty much near Camden almost, in that area, as you know, he's been very, very, very opposed to a lot of the governor's policies. He's concerned about not just the millionaire's tax, again, as we mentioned before, raising it here in New Jersey, as I said to you earlier, again, raising it from what it is right now at 8.97% to 10.75%. And that could be a lot for high-income earners, and as well as the other taxes the governor's proposing. Folks, I'm concerned. I don't know if the governor and his staff have looked at this adequately. I'm looking forward to having the governor on later on this summer here on Politically Direct to sort of, you know, not necessarily take him to task, but have a conversation. You know, I'm a homeowner. I'm a taxpayer. I'm concerned. You know, where is all this money going to come from? Is taxing our way to prosperity the right way? We'll find out. But certainly right now, folks, as the budget needs to be passed on the 30th, it's very interesting as to what Democrats in New Jersey will agree upon at the 11th hour. And that, folks, is tonight's first shot. Again, 818-572-8032, toll-free number. Again, tonight, if you want to call in and open playing with me, it is brought to you by Insider J. And now, ladies and gentlemen, at 8:10 past the hour here on the East Coast, it's my pleasure to welcome to the show a first-timer, the mayor of Fanwood, New Jersey, a great municipality in Central Jersey, in Union County specifically, the wonderful mayor, Colleen Kumar. Madam Mayor, how are you tonight? Welcome to Politically Direct.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it. And I know you've had a busy day, Madam Mayor. Can I call you Colleen, or do you want me to sort of stick to the proper protocol, Madam Mayor?
No, Colleen is fine.
Okay. Well, Colleen, again, welcome to the show. And I know that, you know, it's great to have you on here. And certainly, I'm not sure if you saw the promo video that I posted today, but certainly one of the things I wanted to get started with you on today in terms of our discussion was really, you know, how visible you are as a role model for women in government.
Sure.
And specifically,
thank you.
You know, I remember, no, absolutely. You know, and, you know, you certainly deserve it. I remember reading a great article about you back in February, if I'm not mistaken, in the Wall Street Journal. And, you know, dedicated subscriber to the Wall Street Journal. And I remember reading that article. And listen, I'm a Hudson County guy. I take a lot of pride in knowing not just Hudson County politics, but New Jersey politics. And I know that I had seen your name a lot in recent years, and certainly the work that you do, not just with the Democratic Party, but what you do for women. And really, this article really captured my attention and sort of the necessity about getting more women elected to state government. I know that you had pursued the chairmanship in Union County. I know that did not materialize, but you are the vice chair in Union County working
with
State Senator Scutari there. Tell me about that entire journey, about getting into that position. I know you had served as the temporary chair since the previous chair stepped down. And maybe for our listeners today that aren't aware, what are the responsibilities that encompass a county political chair?
Sure. So first, thank you for inviting me to call in and talk a little bit about women and being involved with politics and by extension government. So I am actually in my fourth term, my 15th year as serving as the mayor in the borough of Fanwood. And, you know, I think I love being the mayor. And the longer I've been the mayor, I have always gotten more involved with issues that sort of transcend just a borough or, you know, the county and into the state. So the Wall Street Journal article focused on meeting women who were reshaping New Jersey politics and how it was getting more women elected, you know, and tackling and acknowledging that there's a political party structure that wields a lot of power in selecting and promoting candidates. And with that comes endorsements and fundraising and ballot position. And, you know, I've been involved for a long time, in 5 years as the vice chair of the party, and I felt like it was a time for me to step forward and seek the position. Didn't turn out the way I wanted it to be, and Senator Scutari is the chairman, and he and I will work together moving forward.
And we'll get to not necessarily the relationship that you have with State Senator Scutari and also Chairman Scutari, and we'll talk a little bit about sort of a major policy issue that I know he is pretty much, you know, in the forefront here in New Jersey, in Trenton. But before we get to that, Colleen, you know, I look at the advancements you've made in Fanwood, and even before that, I mean, I think for a lot of our listeners tonight that aren't aware, I mean, your professional experience began in Jersey City, right here in Hudson County in the early 1990s. If you could tell our listeners tonight, what was that like?
It did. I actually worked for Jerry McCann in his second term as mayor, as an aide to the mayor, and it was the best time of my life, to be honest with you. I worked with Buddy DeMolier, who is sort of a legend in Hudson County, and I really cut my teeth on politics, but I also saw at that stage the good things that government can do and how government can actually change people's lives if it's harnessed correctly and really help a lot of people. So, you know, I'm proud of my Jersey City, Hudson County roots. I was there from Jerry McCann, and I stayed on actually through Brett Schumler and doing economic development through his administration. So it was a great time, and it served me very well. And I made friends that, you know, I have to this day, and I enjoy my time going back into Jersey City and Hudson County all the time.
I know one of the things that I'm sure many of my listeners aren't aware of, again, from your experience in Jersey City in the early 90s and certainly towards the end of your tenure there, working there, what most people won't know is that you really were very instrumental in working on that progress, on the project, excuse me, about getting the Hudson Bergen light rail system up and running. And again, a lot of
Yeah, well, that's when it started.
That, but,
Yeah, it was vision. There was a lot of vision that went into. Yeah, there was a lot of vision that went into the Jersey City of today, the downtown Jersey City, and it started, you know, really with Jerry McCann, who had vision and understood like laying fiber optic cables and, you know, just really understanding the waterfront and what it could be and the visioning. And the light rail was, you know, a vision that really took a lot out of people because, you know, you had eminent domain, you had to make room for the tracks itself. People didn't necessarily understand it. But today you couldn't imagine not having it.
Oh, absolutely. And let's be very fair. If we look at downtown Jersey City right now, we look at sort of the progress of the light rail, think about 20 years ago. You know, look at when you look at the marina down in the downtown Jersey City and even here in Weehawken, where I am in Union City, and of course moving throughout the county, I mean, the fact of not having the light rail is something that, you know, we couldn't imagine, like you said. And certainly it'd be nice if they extended at some point, because we certainly need the extensions, I think, that are necessary to eventually make it the Bergen, because there's nothing in Bergen yet. So I'm hoping that eventually they break ground on that. But Colleen, one of the things that stands out for me about your origins in Hudson County in terms of your familiarity with economic development. I mean, you've been able to take that experience and transcend it into what we have seen in the borough of Fanwood, New Jersey. We've seen just a tremendous amount of development in not just, you know, sort of local businesses, but seeing really the real estate in Fanwood as a borough increase exponentially. As the mayor, and certainly you've been there for some time, what would you say has been probably been the biggest advancement in that borough from the moment you took office up until now?
Well, I think my time in Jersey City doing economic development prepared me very well to come into Union County, to come into Fanwood, which is a lovely suburban community that has a train station. We are on the Raton Valley line, but we never really had a downtown. There was never any option to live downtown. There wasn't really very few shopping options. And I just felt when I got there that progress had been talked about and argued over, but no one could figure out how actually to introduce new buildings or development that actually people embraced. You know, so my philosophy was I would harness the energy of people who wanted more sensible development in their downtown without touching the core of the community, which is your single family residence, and target the growth there. But government moved slowly, and development, this is through the recession that I had started this, and it's taken us like 10 years of really hard, diligent, continuous work. But now we have been seen as a model of how to do smart suburban development, smart growth, as they say. And we have people living downtown. You know, we have restaurant downtown. We have retail and commercial space. And we have the Route 28 South Avenue corridor that has really seen tremendous growth. And it's just been, it's been a great journey for me. And I have thanked the people in Fanwood over the course of the four terms for believing in me to move the vision forward. And it's been great. It's been a great journey.
No, absolutely. And again, I was doing my homework for tonight for your appearance here, Colleen. Certainly, I've seen that in a lot of what we are witnessing as a very serious economic development and really sort of a, you know, an ongoing evolution that's taking place in Union County. And we'll get back to sort of the local aspects of governance there. But I really want to sort of ask you, I know as a very visible woman in New Jersey politics, I think that And one of the things that I think stands out for me, especially on this show, is dissecting the political climate in New Jersey, Colleen. And I'll sort of throw a scenario or a theory at you, and tell me if I'm wrong. And again, this is the academic in me that really sort of thinks out loud when it comes to these sort of things. And, you know, the political climate in New Jersey is very challenging because, for example, just because you have a D next to your name doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, not every Democrat is built the same. And I would argue that not every Republican is built the same in New Jersey. And I think what we're seeing in New Jersey specifically now with Governor Murphy having, you know, been inaugurated in January, now the Democratic Party controls chambers of the legislature and, of course, the governor's office and, of course, you know, an enormous amount of municipalities. But in New Jersey, though, Colleen, it seems that, again, you know, working with State Senator Scutari, as you are, you know, and also with the Union County Democratic Organization, a very powerful sort of political entity, we're seeing that not all Democrats are sort of seeing eye to eye in the way I think that the way that New Jersey has to sort of make progress economically. And we're seeing that there are some Democrats in New Jersey sort of spread out that maybe aren't in line with the vision that Governor Murphy is outlining in terms of heavy taxation, sort of, you know, raising, this, let's say, the sales tax back up to its 7%, you know, taxing ride-sharing services, home-sharing services, and other things. A lot of New Jerseyans are concerned, and I know that you're a very dedicated Democrat, but I've also have read that you're a very reasonable Democrat. And sometimes rationale and reason, sometimes they don't govern politics in New Jersey. But I know the whole thing done, you know, makes you very reasonable and rational. Is the concern a legitimate one by New Jerseyans about sort of the economic path that so that Governor Murphy and Democrats are taking New Jerseyans?
Sure. So let me try to answer some of what you had stated. So to me, the Democratic Party is this huge tent, you know, and so the fact that we may not always get along. I'm in my fourth term and been involved with statewide and county politics for the entire time. And there's always factions of the party that don't necessarily see eye to eye. But that's okay, you know, as far as I'm concerned. You know, I am a Democratic mayor in a small suburban community, you know, and then you have Democratic mayors in large urban communities. So we all have different priorities. We all have, you know, different views, but there's certain core values which, you know, ties us together. And with control of the governor's office and the two branches, the Senate and the Assembly, it comes a lot of responsibility. Yes? Hello? Hello? Hello?
I have no idea what happened.
Colleen?
Yes.
Hello? Hello, Colleen, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not sure what happened.
I'm sorry about that. I don't know. You know what? I know it's T-Mobile. They've been garbage lately. It might have interfered with the call. I sincerely apologize. I'm very sorry.
That's okay.
Take us back in sort of the onset of your answer. I'm sorry. I wasn't getting into
Okay. We were just So we were talking about statewide Democratic politics, and you have the governor and, you know, Governor Murphy, and you have the two branches, you know, they're all controlled by Democrats. And as I was saying, it, you know, comes with a tremendous amount of responsibility and power. And how we do need to all focus on the middle class, and we need to be able to keep New Jersey affordable. And as a mayor, I have always, regardless of the party, have really tried to draw attention to what is going on in Trenton and how that translates down into the local level, because it's the property taxes that actually are probably the most significant thing that are on people's minds. And we have to be able to keep New Jersey affordable, and 60% of – for me, the 60% of the total of our property taxes goes to the public school system. So where we sit, a lot of the mayors, is how we actually fund our public school system, you know, that becomes the most important thing of keeping New Jersey affordable. On the local level, municipal government is usually about 15 to, say, 20%. of the whole, you know, of your tax bill. And then you have the county government, and then you have the education component of it. So I'm hoping to see, you know, what Trenton does together to adequately fund our public schools, which will then translate, you know, and I think that's important, is translate into actually property tax relief or helping us on the local level keep taxes stable. You know, I think that's critical.
Well, one of the things, Colleen, and again, folks, if you're just joining us here at about 8:30 here, 8:25 on the East Coast, it's my pleasure to have Fanwood, New Jersey Mayor and first Vice Chair of the Union County Democratic Organization, the great Colleen Maher, here on the show. Colleen, that's a great answer. And one of the things that I think our listeners are probably curious about is, you know, for a mayor of your municipality, your borough, it has to be at times overwhelming trying to, again, keep property taxes down, making sure that the revenue that's collected within the borough is being spent responsibly. You work in a council form of government. And, you know, for our listeners tonight that maybe aren't aware of some of those challenges, and we'll get back to sort of a statewide conversation in a moment, but for our listeners tonight, how overwhelming can this job be? Because, again, you know, obviously comparing the mayoral office in one, let's say, a small municipality as opposed to, let's say, Camden or Newark or Elizabeth is vastly different. What are some of the challenges you have faced in your time there as mayor in Fanwood?
Sure. So I would say that for us in Fanwood, you know, we get a dollar a year to serve. So I always say we are not doing this because we're looking for any financial gain. You know, we do this because we truly believe we can make a difference. And there's in local government, especially probably in small to medium-sized municipalities, you know, the local elected officials tend to wear many hats. You don't really have a lot of professionals, so that you really are, you know, doing and getting involved in a lot of the details, which is why it's really important to try to find good candidates, you know, that will be willing to serve, willing to sacrifice time away from their families, bring something to the governing body as far as what they may do professionally, to really try to advance the issues that we have on the local level. There's a lot of strain on the local level, you know, and so we watch what happens in Trenton, and we really try to make sure that what comes out of Trenton, it doesn't burden us more than, you know, it should, or that there's not a lot of unfunded mandates, or that at least we have a seat at the table when they are crafting legislation that will ultimately affect the taxpayers, because we are on the front line.
Well, listen, one of the things that stands out for me in terms of, you know, looking at the job description that a mayor sort of encompasses and also working in the council form of government is the compromise necessary on everything municipal level, looking at taxation, looking at the way the funds are appropriated. And, you know, Colleen, when we look at, you know, Fanwood, it's relatively one of the smaller municipalities in Union County, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And comparatively speaking to other municipalities, what's been the feedback? Again, I mean, obviously, you know, you have a very successful run as mayor there. What's been the feedback from other mayors? Because I know you've also served as first vice chair within the League of Municipalities. And I know that it's always,
yes,
a very successful conference every November in Atlantic City. I had the pleasure of attending this past November. And it's always, you know, aside from the cocktail parties, I mean, it's a great gathering in general about
yeah,
government.
Yeah, there's a lot of,
you know,
good information. There's a lot of good information.
Yeah. Absolutely. When you look at what is essential to sort of get a more positive message out there, what remains for you in that regard, in trying to, you know, reinforce the notion and the narrative of, hey, responsible government, it starts, you know, all politics is local. We've heard that. What's been sort of the mission that you sort of continue to be on when it comes to promoting the responsibility in local government?
It's communication, communication, communication. You know, people lead very busy lives, and, you know, they have their kids, you know, they need to make a living. You know, a lot of families, both the mother and the father are working. You know, they come home, they want a nice community, they want a safe community, they want decent public schools, they want parks that they can go to, you know, that are in good shape, They want to be able to walk downtown if possible and, you know, spend their some disposable income locally. And they demand, you know, that their local officials are serving, you know, for the greater good. And to do that, you know, you have to communicate out constantly, because in the age of social media, you get a lot of people, I think, that are quick to be a little negative or maybe not always understand what's going on. And so for me, I find the biggest challenge is whatever we want to do or that we think would be in the best interest of the community is to continuously to communicate and to use social media and to use our public access station and to be accessible because there's a, you know, people need to understand what's going on.
Colleen, I'm glad you brought up social media because I think it's fair to say that the institution of social media has really changed the dynamic of politics.
Dramatically.
At the local level, at the local, absolutely, at the local, the state, and the federal level. But keeping it here in, not just locally, but keeping it in New Jersey, you know, we look at the impact of social media. We look at the fact that the ability for us to get news on our smartphones any time of day, the fact that you can wake up in the morning, and, for example, on in your inbox and see, you know, the morning intelligence briefing from Insider NJ, by the way, from, you know, www.insidernj.com.
Right.
And,
right.
you know, sort of
yeah.
a, you know, quick plug there. I have to make sure, you know, I keep my bosses happy. And
well,
plug.
Doesn't everyone listening read that? Doesn't everybody listening read Insider NJ?
Well, we're hoping. Our traffic is great, so we're hoping to keep it down, absolutely. But one of the things about social media that really, I think, makes it complicated, though, Colleen, is the fact that it's, you know, we don't always see responsible content. And certainly social media gives
right.
anyone and everyone a voice
yep.
with you know, the click of a mouse, with, you know, sort of
yep.
just clicking the send button on their smartphones. And what we're seeing now in New Jersey is sort of, you know, I hate to use this word volatile, but I think it applies. There's a sort of a very volatile political climate, I think, that's engulfing New Jersey about the direction that perhaps we're going in, whether it's, you know, the fear of raising taxes, the fear of whether or not the legislature is being responsible in terms of, again, you know, as a state, we have the highest property taxes in the country. And it seems like a lot of New Jerseyans are concerned, like, okay, it's, you know, we're trusting the legislature to maintain a responsible budget, but taxes keep going up. You know, we saw a gas tax implemented back in 2016. We're going to see the sales tax go back up again. We might see our taxation on other amenities. For example, high-income earners in New Jersey are
right.
going to see an increase in their tax rate. And at the end of the day, you know, when we look at social media, it seems like, oh, my God, like New Jersey is just becoming way too expensive. Is there a, you know, should we sort of not press the panic button yet based on social media? Or is a lot of the information out there maybe sort of true and maybe residents are just sort of catching wind of it now?
I think that the idea that New Jersey is an expensive state has been there for a very long time. And I think that people are very weary because they work so hard. You know, like I said before, you have, you know, families that you have to work one or two jobs. You have, you know, people who are just hanging on. You know, as a mayor, I see, you know, houses that the power's getting shut off or the gas is getting shut off or they need financial help, you know, all over New Jersey, whether it be in Fanwood or in much larger municipalities. And there is a responsibility to actually just not give lip service about keeping New Jersey affordable. You know, there is a responsibility to, again, not just have lip service to protect the middle class. You know, we have to make that happen. We have to make that happen. And so when I look at, you know, the legislation that comes out or the conversations that we're having, I'm hopeful that our leaders, I think they hear that. I think they see that. They see the information about people who are leaving the state, the exodus. But at the same time, we see a strong economy where the housing industry is very strong. You know, we see in our community here, houses stay on the market for possibly like 5 to 10 days and they're gone. You know, we see very strong housing markets still. We see residential multifamily being built all over New Jersey. You know, you see mixed use with the commercial and the apartments going on in almost every single community, you know, from north to south to east to west. And that has people coming into New Jersey when they want to raise families. We're seeing people coming out of New York City, and like where I see in Fanwood, they come from other locations to come into the suburbs to raise their family. So there's this push-pull, right? There's this, you know, we love our state. We think it's great. It's got the shore. It's got the mountains. It's, you know, got the four seasons. We've got, you know, Jersey tomatoes and corn and all the great produce that we sell here and grow. But we have our challenges. We have our challenges. And I have faith that we have a governor who is brand new in his administration, who spent the time campaigning, you know, for close to 2 years to truly understand what the issues are. And I'm here as a local mayor and as a Democrat to support him and to help him, you know, advance what he needs to. And I believe he has ears, and I believe that his administration will listen to us, you know, on the local level, because, you know, that we are who elected him. And so I have great faith that we will come through the challenges, but we need to make some hard decisions. And I think that goes back to some of the public school funding, I think is a crucial one for us on mm-hmm. the local level going forward.
Colleen, I know you're a very proud Democrat. I know in the news cycle last week, Texas Governor Greg Abbott took some considerable shots at New Jersey. And I know it certainly got the attention of Governor Murphy. When you heard some of the – again, I'm not sure if you're familiar with what I'm referring to, but Governor Greg Abbott in Texas made it very clear and sort of taking some shots at New Jersey and making fun of how expensive it is and sort of imploring New Jerseyans and saying, hey, by the way, you know, you move to Texas where there's no state income tax, it's a much more prosperous economy, the weather's better, et cetera. And, you know, certainly Governor Murphy responded in kind to sort of those jabs. As a Democrat, it seemed, you know, that Governor Greg Abbott was taking a shot not just at New Jersey, but the way that New Jersey politics sort of encompasses a state and sort of the way governance is enacted here. How did you feel when you heard Governor Abbott's comments?
Well, you know, I think first and foremost, I think those of us that are born and raised in New Jersey, you know, are having someone take a shot at us is nothing new, right? You know, they don't sure. necessarily understand New Jersey. They, you know, they'll pick apart our politics. They'll pick apart if we have an accent. We'll pick apart our sort of ethnic culture diversity that we have. So, you know, I'm sort of used to it. You know, I looked at the video, you know, I thought, okay, it's kind of cute and, you know, go along about my day. My family is here. My future is here. You know, I decide to, as many of my colleagues throughout the 565 municipalities who are mayors, you know, we plant our flags and we give back to our community, and we will fight, and we will fight to keep New Jersey viable. And we have been in challenges, and if I can govern through, as I said, you know, back in 2006, 2007 with the recession, you know, and how terrible that was for so many of our communities and so many of our residents losing their homes. And, you know, Union County got hit hard with the foreclosures as it did. But we've rebounded, and we have the culture, and we have the ethnic diversity, and we have great food, and we've got the beaches, and we've got, you know, so many wonderful things. And we've got sensible, you know, gun legislation, you know, which, you know, many, many states in the unions should take a look at what we're doing here. So, you know, that kind of crossed my radar for about 2 seconds, and I moved on.
Okay. And the reason I ask is because certainly it's something that stayed in the news cycle for a couple of days, and I know that the governor,
sure.
you know, again, like any governor, was going to defend his state. And I think that, again, whether it's you look at this through a political lens or an economic lens, it certainly got some attention. One of the things that I wanted to ask you today, Colleen, again, and sort of referring back to that great article in the Wall Street Journal back in February,
yeah.
that a great picture of you, by the way, on the article, by the way.
Thanks.
You're very yeah. photogenic, by the way. So nice job with that.
Thank you.
When we think about the political climate today, Colleen, and I was talking about this with my students today, actually not recently, right before final exams, and we were talking about sort of the political climate that we live in, not just at the local level, but state and at the national level. We've seen that there's a narrative perhaps going around that maybe, you know, as a society, we're getting very soft and that we're sort of placating or catering to, for example, the institution known as identity politics. And we know that it becomes a word that triggers debate and discussion, you know, not just on cable news, but on social media. And, you know, as a woman, I know you're a very, very proud Democrat, but you're also a very proud mom and yep. a proud, you know, elected official that goes out there and is very visible. Well, you know, when we think about sort of the political climate for women, let's say today, not just in New Jersey, but nationally, do you feel that it's perhaps heading down a wrong path? Do you feel that maybe things are getting better for women overall? Or do you think it's just sort of remaining stagnant?
So this is what I know. I know when I started out as a mayor 15 years ago, I was one of a little over 100 women that were sitting mayors. As I sit here today, there's 79 directly, you know, women who are mayors out of 565 municipalities. That's a little less than 15%. Terrible, right? Terrible. And when you look at women who serve in that are not the mayors, council people, council women, that number's about 24%. So, you know, while we have made some advances, you know, with, say, you know, Sheila Oliver, who is our first African-American woman to serve as lieutenant governor, and we have Bonnie Watson Coleman, who's my congresswoman and represents us, you know, the only woman to represent us down in Washington and in New Jersey. I still believe we have a long way to go. And part of that, which is what keeps me engaged, is building the bench. Because what I'm concerned about is that you have to harness this excitement, but you have to stay with it. And if you don't succeed the first time, if you step up as a woman and decide that you're going to get involved, you may not win. And if you don't win, you still need to be engaged. You know, and to me, that is part of the reason why I have stayed so long. I love being the mayor, you know, my community, you know, and I get along very well. But I also know that I need to show other women that you can work and you can be a mother. I have three boys that are now 11, 13, and 15. You can do it. It gets a little crazy, and it does take a village sometimes to raise your kids. But as much as women are out there right now, and it's a result, I think, of the 2016 national politics, we just need to stay. And I'm glad to see, you know, organizations like Emerge in New Jersey, you know, that has really, you know, gotten to the point of success, and they have dozens of women, you know, signing up to really learn how to run, and you have through the Rutgers program. There's more support than there was when I started, which is great, but mm-hmm. I also need to see, we need to see that the numbers grow. So I'm hoping that after these midterms congressionally across the country, you know, that we're going to see more women represent us. And in New Jersey, we need that as well. You know, women don't have to, you know, be told when to run. You don't have to wait your turn. You know, you can stand up. As I say, you know, you don't need any special degree. You don't need any sort of different political or professional background. You have to have a passion. You have to have a fire, you know, in you. You should be able to articulate why you want to, you know, you're stepping up and asking people to support you and believe in you. And women are great legislators. Women are great politicians. I think that's what separates us a little from men is that we don't necessarily look at getting involved always for the power. You know, I think that we look and we believe we truly can make a difference. And that's what I think motivates us, you know, from the beginning.
Well, in terms of making a difference, Colleen, I'm glad you brought up that point because it sort of leads me into my next segue here and something I want to get your thoughts on. I know that, again, as a very visible public official, and certainly, you know, again, as I mentioned on my promo video today, I mean, you are a role model for women in government. You're a role model for women that are seeking public service. And no, you're more than welcome. And But one of the things that certainly has risen in the last couple of years, and we saw that shortly after the inauguration of the 45th president in January 2017, you know, we saw the Women's March that originated in Washington. Of course, it spread out throughout the country. There was one in Manhattan. There were many different women's marches throughout New Jersey, for example.
Sure.
And there was also one that took place this January as well. So it seems like it's going to become sort of a common theme every year. But I have to sort of ask you because, and again, I was talking about this with my students this semester, gender class that I taught, is that, you know, at the onset, the value and the goal, for example, of the Women's March to raise awareness about issues that are important to women, certainly I think has to, you know, stay not just at the national stage, but the statewide and also the local one. Do you think at any point, though, now, maybe, Colleen, that maybe the message is being hijacked? Because whether it's cable news that's doing it or social media, you know, we can see that, you know, it's the best of intentions to march with the idea about raising issues about, let's say, women's rights and women's health and other issues that are vital to women, not just in politics, but in general in society. Are we starting to see that narrative maybe get a little bit hijacked? You know, we're seeing some radical views being espoused or some radical demonstrations or some very sort of bombastic type of, you know, scenarios presenting themselves. Does that concern you at all, how maybe that might sort of take away from the narrative of what, let's say, marching for women's rights should be about?
You know, my first reaction is no. And because, you know, having served now, as I said, for my fourth term, I have the at least perspective, right? And I'm in my early 50s, you know, so, and I've been involved with politics and women's issues, you know, for, you know, decades now. Mm-hmm. I, for myself and my generation, I think it's wonderful. I think the conversation, the resurgence that I see of the NOW organizations in the state and in the county, you know, the fact that women are marching, yes, there will always be those who hijack the conversation, but we have that in everything. Anything that could be even mildly controversial, you have extremes, or you have people who will try to knock it. And, you know, I've heard, well, you know, why are they marching? You know, why don't they take that energy and go do, you know, something else? Well, because they want to march, because they want to be around people that feel like them or think like them. And I don't see anything that's wrong with that. And if it provokes conversations, and if the conversations are a little uncomfortable, or that they produce, you know, differences of opinions, I'm all right with that.
Is it getting radical, though, in some respects? I mean, when we see many demonstrations and maybe some of the
Well,
the
I think that there's a lot of anger. I think there's a lot of anger that stemmed from the national election. I see a lot of anger out there. I see it on the social media. I say to, you know, some of my friends, sometimes, you know, it's like you scratch the surface and there is a lot of anger that's out there. And it kind of bubbles forth with, you know, the social media, which we touched on before, or possibly, you know, with the marches. Yes, I can see it. I feel it, you know, myself. But I think it's people who can try to bring the conversations to center. I think it is having people who are generational, you know, whether they are the millennials, whether they are in their 40s, their 50s, their 60s, who are able to talk. You know, we talked about that before. Having conversations, communicating is key. Do I want to see some of the tenor that's going on sort of come down a little? Yes. You know, I think we all heard about stories of people who couldn't even talk about politics at their family tables during the holidays, or that friends stopped being friends, or people are unfriending people because, you know, it was just crazy, that tenor. So to that point, yes, I do see it. But what do? We plow through it, right? And we can't not talk about
Absolutely.
It.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Getting back to the national stage, you just mentioned now, and certainly as a Democrat, I know that you feel confident, for example, as we know, like anything, I mean, I'm sure you're a student of history, Colleen, as I am, and we know that on a national stage, for example, as a Democrat, you have to be feeling a little optimistic because you know, during the midterm election of any first term, whether it's a Republican in the White House or a Democrat, you tend to see some losses in seats, both in the House and both in the Senate. So certainly if you're a Democrat, you go into this November, you know, very optimistically. But when we look at it, and again, and I know you're very astute politically, but if we'll let me paint a scenario and see what you think of this. Let's say it's we're looking at the economy the way it looks at nationally. It seems pretty prosperous right now. We're seeing some strides being made internationally, whether it's the release of three, you know, Americans now safely back in the United, on American soil, which is great. We're seeing the very tangible reality of a North Korea being denuclearized. We're seeing today's announcement of top ISIS commanders being captured. Again, I've had this conversation with students and colleagues. And listen, without a doubt, there's a very tangible notion that the president of the United States at many times makes some very cringeworthy comments. He makes some comments that make you shake your head. But, you know, again, being a student of politics, as I know you are, as I am as well, if the narrative is just going to be we hate the president, but if we're seeing an economy that's still prospering, if we're seeing strides being made internationally, is that narrative just going to be enough for Democrats in November? Because if it's just we hate the president, but we're seeing these strides.
It better not be, right? It's got to have, we need to be more substantive than that. You know, I mean, that's too easy for me. You know what I mean? And I would hope that as Democrats and people who are truly serious about their runs for office, that they don't just believe that's what's going to get them elected.
Well, the reason I'm asking is because that seems like a very tangible, or it seems like the only blueprint right now that's on the books right now. And if that's the case, I mean, again, like any first term, you know, midterms, there'll be some losses, of course, in seats, both in the House and the Senate. But the idea, and I know you read about politics, Colleen, but the idea that the Democratic Party can just outright win both chambers of Congress this November, I don't know if that's a tangible reality. And I'm not being partisan here because, again, I'm an independent, so I don't really have a dog in the fight. But if I'm being objective, and again, as an academic, and I'm looking at this very realistically and rationally, if that's the narrative, as a Democrat, are you just concerned that, for example, that's not going to get it done both on a policy perspective and also sort of in an electoral perspective?
Sure. So I believe that is a piece of the story as Democrats is fighting against Trump, is pushing back against, you know, him and everything that, you know, some of his social media rants and what, you know, his quick fingers on Twitter and things that I think a lot of us kind of look at and go, oh, what, you know, it's just a little too much. But we also, I believe, I'm seeing us put forward as Democrats very strong candidates. You know, you look at Mickey Sherrill that's running for Congress. You know, you see Malinowski who's running in my district against Leonard Lance. You know, you really are you're putting forward good candidates that can articulate the problems that they see with the Trump administration, but they also come with their own experience, and it's just not that one tune that they're singing. And I think that it's because you can't just run on that. You just can't run on, you know, I hate Trump. So there will be a percentage of voters that will come out and vote like that. But I think a smart candidate and a smart campaign understands it's not everything. Because when you look at the television and the stories that you mentioned about the freeing of the hostages and the denuclearization, those are very significant, important stories for our country, and you can't really diminish that, because if you start to diminish it, then I think that becomes almost a negative on those who are trying to, you know, minimalize that.
Colleen, that's a really refreshing perspective, and I'm glad you really outlined that for me today, right now. And folks, again, if you're just joining us here at 8:55 on the East Coast, it's my pleasure to have on the show here for a little bit longer the mayor of Fenton, New Jersey, and also the first vice chair of the Union County Democratic Organization, the great Colleen Maher. Just to get away from politics for a moment, Colleen,
sure.
You know, it has to be exhausting being able to balance your responsibilities as a mayor and also as a mom. And, you know, being, again, you know, with Mother's Day on Sunday, you know, listen, Mother's Day should be every day for what mothers bring to our families and being ultimately the foundation of our families. And how have you been able to do it for as long as you've been doing it as both a mayor and a mom? It has to be exhausting. And what sort of advice can you give women listening to that about that very, very delicate balance of a career and the importance of motherhood?
So I owe everything that I am to my mother. So my mother, Nancy Uasis, was someone who loved politics herself. So she was a special assistant to Brendan Byrne, and then she was a special assistant to Jim Florio. And I sort of grew up, you know, listening to politics on a state level. And so she was my inspiration. And so when I fast forward and I get to decide, you know, about getting involved with politics and campaigns and then running for office, I was fortunate because I have a mother that understood that and helped me, you know. And so I had just had my first son. He was a year old when I got sworn in, and now he's a freshman in high school, and I've had two more babies along the way. And my mother and my sister Maureen have been there. So I've had strong women that have sort of helped me and allowed me to sort of go out and spend time, because when you are an elected official, that's what you do. You spend time outside of your house. You know, there's meetings, there's events, you know, there's emails, you know, phone calls. And your family does suffer at times. You know, and there is, you know, sometimes it is a heavy heart when I have to walk out and or I'm not there at something that I think I should be. But I also know that my boys understand what I do, that I serve, that, you know, they say, you know, mom helps people. That makes me feel good about it. But women definitely need to support each other. And that we've always said that, you know, and that's always been one of the challenges that I have heard, you know, across New Jersey in politics and even nationally, you know, is that while in New Jersey we're 50% of the population, but we're just a fraction of the elected officials. And no one's going to get us there as women other than other women who understand it and who put that hand out to help those that are coming, you know, behind us and to be role models. And so as we go into Mother's Day, you know, I know for all my almost 80 other women colleagues that are out there across New Jersey, you know, that do this like I do, you know, that sometimes go to bed and wonder what are we doing and why are we doing it, you know, and we get up in the morning and we say, well, we know why we're doing it, you know, because we're making a difference. And so it's a journey. It's definitely a journey.
Well, listen, it certainly has been. And again, and I have to give you just an enormous amount of credit, because it's hard, as you mentioned, to be able to balance that and be able to, again, balance the ability to govern, you know, competently and efficiently at the local level. And again, to be a mom, to be there for your kids and to sort of, you know, fulfill those, you know, that role of motherhood that women take so seriously. And I have to applaud you.
Well,
for that.
I believe, I believe women are change agents, so I'm just glad to be one of them.
No, listen, and I'm sure many women tonight look at you as an exceptional role model and certainly as the prototype of what, you know, they're looking to do, not just with a career, but also with motherhood as well. Colleen, one thing I wanted to sort of ask, because I know that it's going to continue dominating the narrative on a statewide level, and it involves your county chair, State Senator Scutari. I know that Senator Scutari has been very much at the forefront of pushing legislation in New Jersey that would outright legalize recreational marijuana. He has cited on numerous occasions, you know, citing the studies from his trip out to Colorado, seeing how it works out there, and trying to incorporate that into New Jersey because, you know, he feels like many other elected officials that the revenues being raised from legalization would benefit New Jersey. As a mother and certainly as a public official, I don't know if you've had conversations with the state senator, whether, you know, you want to disclose whatever you've discussed, but as a public official, but more so as a mom, in New Jersey, are we ready for this sort of narrative of, hey, you know, we need money, we if we legalize marijuana and we tax it the same way we do alcohol and tobacco, it's going to greatly help the state. Aside from the decriminalization element, we'll get to that in a minute. But as a public official and as a mom,
sure,
do you think we here in New Jersey are ready to introduce that into our way of life as it pertains to outright legalization of recreational marijuana?
I honestly think that that is a real conversation that is going on right now, and it's provoking a lot of different opinions. I think that the medicinal, you know, the medical marijuana, people understand it, and, you know, we see the expansion of that. I think that the conversation about the legalization to the recreational piece of it has provoked a lot of conversations with mayors, with law enforcement, you know, with elected officials. And that conversation is one that I'm watching as it plays out. But when I look at our young people, you know, and I'm a mother of three boys, one that is in high school, what I see that is starting to concern me a little is the vaping and the juuling. And we're seeing that almost as an epidemic in a lot of our schools. And, you know, kind of, I think, educating some of our parents about, you know, what's going on there. I mean, that's a very unregulated industry. That is something that is, you know, they're using these vape pens and the juuling, and they're odorless. And it's, and the nicotine that is in there is, you know, much, much more than a pack of cigarettes. You know, when I can remember, you know, being a young teen and my mother was smoking at the time, and we kind of like steal a cigarette and, you know, Parliament 100s, I can remember, you know, sort of going off and doing. But what I see and trying to educate myself on with the Board of Health and the schools is this explosion of vaping.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up, because we're seeing that, at, as you mentioned, at a very young age now, where vaping is becoming sort of a common trend.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And to me, and I'm glad you sort of brought up the scenario of, you know, you mentioned your mom and you saw her with a cigarette. And I sort of posed this scenario to other elected officials. I had a State Senator Rice on a few weeks ago. I had State Senator Stack on. I'm looking to have State Senator Scutari on at some point. I'd love to have him on. So any help you could do with that, Colleen, I'd appreciate that. I'd love to have the senator on. But and one of the scenarios I painted in my conversations were, you know, growing up for me, let's say where I live in Hudson County, which is very densely populated, very urban. But I remember growing up, Colleen, that, you know, I'd come back from playing soccer or basketball in the summer with my friends, my buddies walking up and down my block. And, you know, being it's so densely populated, you know, I'd see people on their porches, you know, having a beer or having a cigarette. I'd go to barbecues with my parents. I'd see adults having cigarettes. I'd see adults drinking alcohol and, you know, having cigars. And you don't really think about it. You know, it's sort of been ingrained in our development at a young age. And now, and especially for you, again, I sort of want to, not to sort of beat this to death, but, you know, as a mom, the idea that, you know, your younger kids are coming home and they see, let's say, neighbors or other adults on their front porches smoking marijuana, or, you know the odor. You can recognize it a mile away. And, you know, they come home and they say, hey, mom, you know, I noticed, you know, Mr. Jones down the block on his, you know, on his porch, just, you know, having a beer, and he was smoking, and man, that really stunk. And oh my God, like, is that potty smoking, mom? And, you know, like why?
Well, it's conversations, but it's all about conversations, right? It's all about conversations,
sure,
that a parent needs to have. You know, I have a freshman in high school. He's 15.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm having conversations with him about the vaping, you know, the smoking of the marijuana, you know, the parties, you know, and so it's a responsibility that goes along with having children, is making sure that we are aware, you know, of what's going on and what they're involved in. And that's why I go back to sort of the vaping. I go back to the juuling as what's going on. You know, the smoking of marijuana has been around for, you know, a really, really long time. And that's why there's this push to decriminalize it and to, you know, to make it legal, you know, because they feel that as a society in New Jersey, we're ready to go there, and that they look at other states and they have sort of, you know, are are weighing the pros and the cons and the money that's being spent. And it's a whole conversation, right? It's a whole conversation that I think is going to go on for, you know, over the next year. And I'm sort of following that conversation and how it may affect legalizing it and opening up the stores within the communities and the law enforcement. But I think it's those public officials that can also keep in tune with the next thing that's coming. And I see the next thing that's here is this unregulated industry of the vaping that is targeting our kids, targeting them 100% with the tobacco industry and the multi-million dollars that they're spending in advertising and how easy it is to buy and how we don't have a clue over really what's in it and how unregulated it is.
You know what? That's a great point, and I'm glad you bring that up. And for me, it's interesting because I don't vape, Colleen. I've never even smoked a cigarette. Like, I don't care about that stuff. You know, I like a cigar. I like a good Cuban cigar every now and then, being that my mom's Cuban, and you know, I have a nice glass of wine every now and then. But you're absolutely right about the very tangible dangers that exist about that with vaping and how it's catering or targeting. You know, very much the way the nicotine companies targeted people in the 50s and 60s, it seems like this industry is doing the same thing. Or am I wrong?
I think it is. And you know what? And as a true mother, I have to get my kids to bed.
Okay,
they're all around me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, listen.
No,
Right before I let you go, though, Colleen, again, I do want to. Just one more thing before I let you go here. And
yes.
I want to thank you for coming on tonight. You've been a great guest.
I've enjoyed it.
Well, I'm glad you did. And one thing I just want to sort of get out there before I let you go is, you know, after interviewing you for about an hour, I pretty much have grilled you. You know, now's your chance. The floor is yours. If you want to ask something of me or you want to question me about something, you know, ask away. Now it's your turn because I've been doing it for an hour. Now it's your turn if you want to, you know, put me on the spot.
Well, no, I want to just say I think this is great. I think that what you're doing about having substantive conversations that drill down on issues that aren't just topical, you know, quick hit and runs and taking the time to talk to someone like myself, you know, that, you know, works really hard as being a local mayor and tries to get involved with county and statewide politics. I thank you for, you know, shedding light on me and my thoughts and by extension sharing them and giving, you know, local officials like myself some exposure. I think it's great.
Well, Colleen, you've been an absolute peach tonight. Thank you so much for coming on. I want to applaud you for, you know, the good work you do, not just as the mayor in Fanwood, but certainly, you know, again, your status as a role model for women in government. I think you're doing an outstanding job.
Right, I appreciate that.
In advance, I want to wish you a very happy Mother's Day. Keep up the great work. I look forward to having you back on the show later on this summer, okay?
Thank you very much. Keep up the good work.
Oh, thank you, Colleen. You're so kind. Have a great night. Happy Mother's Day again.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Have a great – you too. All right, folks, there. Great, great episode tonight there with the mayor of Fanwood, New Jersey. Colleen Marr. Again, it was sort of funny to, you know, I know she had to get her kids to bed, so that was a great way to sort of end the segment tonight with her. And again, a shout out to her kids there and being so patient with her this evening. And folks, you know, again, it's a great job there. If you've not read up on the advancements and really how prosperous Fanwood, New Jersey is, it's a great borough right in central Jersey in the heart of Union County. You should definitely check them out. Again, a great article, I know, this past February in the Wall Street Journal. If you're not a regular reader of the Wall Street Journal, I mean, you should definitely look into it. But it was a great article that featured Mayor Marr back in February. And certainly, you know, the work that she does, I think, is just really admirable. And it's been a good episode tonight with her. And, again, I have to sort of applaud her for being on as long as she was tonight. So, again, a shout out to her and really a good job with really having a really substantive conversation there. And I thank her for her kind words. That was really kind of her to say, which she doesn't have to. So folks here, before we let you go, it's a 9:10 here on the East Coast. And wanted to just sort of, you know, run some topics here from the Insider NJ website again. And sort of, you know, talking a little local politics here. I know it's something that's is making statewide news, but announced today on Insider NJ with our editor-in-chief. Again, as always, I mean, the guy is everywhere, and the guy gets the scoops. And, you know, awesome job by our editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, announcing that a DeGees will indeed run for the chairmanship of the Hudson County Democratic Organization. Now, DeGees will be the name coming up next month during the organizational meeting of the Hudson County Democratic Organization, but it's not going to be Tom DeGees. It's his daughter, Amy. Now, again, sources told Insider NJ today that Amy DeGees, the daughter of Hudson County Executive Tom DeGees, will indeed run for the chairmanship of the HCDO coming up in June. Now, apparently tonight a powwow was scheduled among the county executive allies, which include, of course, himself and also U.S. Representative Alvio Ceres out of the 8th Congressional District here in Hudson County, and other loyalists, which include North Bergen Mayor and State Senator Nick Sacco, as well as other officials in Hudson County tonight. So that definitely is going to make the stakes a little bit more interesting here coming up to June 13th, which is the organizational meeting. Again, a couple of tidbits here from the article. Again, great job, as always, by Max Pizarro, the editor-in-chief at Insider NJ. Today, some of the quotes from the article here. Amy DeGees will run to lead the party against State Senator and Union City Mayor Brian Sack. The candidate for HCDO chair, who won re-election locally Tuesday night in a very, very big margin, has aligned with Jersey City Mayor Stephen Phillip to remove HCDO support for Tom DeGees, who's up for re-election next year. Now, the DeGees plays the latest plot line in the countywide civil war between the two wings of the Democratic Party in Hudson County. Of course, the one aligned with Sack and Phillip, and the other one that are lined up with DeGees and also State Senator Nicholas Sacco. Now, the Hudson County Executive's Inner Sanctum allies kicked the tires on some of the names in the lead-up to this week, including former mayor of Jersey City, Jerry Healy. But, of course, within the last 48 hours, Tom DeGees' daughter became the overwhelming favorite to be able to stave off the onslaught from State Senator Sack. Now, sources told Insider NJ that DeGees, a native of the Heights section of Jersey City, will be able to go toe-to-toe with Phillip forces for county committee votes in the biggest city in the county, as well as play for support in Hoboken, which is the home of Stack ally, the recently elected mayor, Ravi Bala. Now, last week at the re-election kickoff, DeGees told Insider NJ that his preference to take on Stack would not be, quote, an old white guy like himself, which signaled at the very least a ruling out of former Jersey City Mayor Jerry Healy. As it turned out, the county executive did not mind and even saw fit to recognize as an organizational asset the backing of the closest thing to the female version of himself. Now, his first departing from the meeting after the HCDO affirmed DeGees groaned over the condition of the county and the war with Sack, blaming Phillip and irritated by the apparent stubbornness of longtime Sack rival Nicholas Sacco. The source mentioned, quote, North Bergen won't budge, and also DeGees would bail in a minute so long as he knew his two daughters were safe. Brian wishes he could walk it back, but that Phillip should indeed be buried. Quote, between today and reorganization is a century, so anything could change, the source mentioned. So, folks, I have to say that this is a really, really interesting dynamic that just surfaced today. Again, a nice job by Max Pizarro, our great editor-in-chief here at Insider NJ. And, you know, I talked about this a little bit yesterday on my local podcast here in Hudson County, which is, by the way, called Talk in the Hudson. If you haven't listened to it, folks, check it out, www.blogtalkradio.com/talkinthehudson. It airs every Wednesday night live at 9 p.m., so if you want to check that out also, mark it on your calendars, as well as some of your listening pleasure as well. But, you know, folks, listen, this is really a very volatile situation taking place here in Hudson County. And I think, you know, again, as a political scientist and as also an academic, this was a tremendously politically shrewd move by the county executive here in Hudson County to get his daughter to run, who is very popular and certainly can very possibly steal votes away, committee seats, from Jersey City, where it's sort of not a foregone conclusion, but the heart of the committee seats really reside in Jersey City. We're talking about over, I believe, 300 committee seats, I think, are here in Jersey City. So very interesting to see what's going to happen there. And folks, listen, a lot can happen between tonight and June 13th, which is, again, a little less than a month away, a little over a month away, excuse me. So it'll be very interesting to see, though, that how this civil war materializes. I mean, again, I, as a matter of fact, I had the county executive on my local show on Monday night, and he made no reservations whatsoever that he is not looking to step down. He's not going to step aside. He's going to fight this to the very end, and we'll see. We'll see what happens at the organizational meeting next month. Now, should his daughter win and become the chairwoman of the Hudson County Democratic Organization, that could completely throw everything into a loop here in Hudson County. It could really, to be very honest with you folks, it could very well spell the doom for Jersey City Mayor Stephen Fulop. Brian Stack will be fine. He's the mayor here in Union City. He's the state senator as well. And, you know, Brian's political power remains very strong. Can't say the same for Stephen Fulop. His political capital has weakened significantly. And to be very honest with you, you know, he doesn't have the political clout he once did. And that's the truth. And that's not me being mean or malicious against the mayor of Jersey City. That's just the truth. You know, I have insiders telling me this. It's not like I'm making this up or I'm being theoretical. I mean, this is tangible information I've received from insiders, not just in the county, but also statewide. So very, very interesting move today to have Amy DeGees run as for chairman of the HEDO. And we'll find out. We'll find out coming up on June 13th whether or not she's going to have enough to stave off Brian Stack, who is her main challenger coming up for this organizational meeting. So, again, great job by Insider NJ there, posting the exclusive earlier today. Again, Max Prezzaro, folks, I do not envy the engine of his car because he's probably putting out miles more than anybody in this state. I mean, he's up and down the Garden State and really getting us the scoops here that we all look forward to on Insider NJ. And again, you can just, you know, what can you say about how good the content is each and every day on the website? So, folks, again, if you miss any part of tonight's broadcast, a very excellent broadcast, in my opinion, with Fanwood, New Jersey Mayor Colleen Maher. Great job there in the sense of really having a very substantive conversation about a wide variety of issues there. So, again, hats off to the mayor of Fanwood, New Jersey, and also the first vice chair of the Union County Democratic Organization there, Colleen Marsh. A nice job by her. You can check out tonight's episode by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/politicallydirectNJ. You can do so, again, from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. If you have a topic or issue you want to hear about next week, folks, please write to the show's inbox, which is politicallydirectNJ@yahoo.com. Again, I'd love to hear from you, what you thought about tonight's episode with Mayor Maher, and all of my previous guests as well. Again, right to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. And don't forget to follow the show on Instagram, @politicallydirectnj. You can also follow me directly on Instagram, @your_favorite_Fernando. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter. Greatly appreciate that. 6,000-plus followers and counting on Twitter. So nice to see my following is growing online. Don't forget to like the show on Facebook, ladies and gentlemen. 340 likes and counting on there as well. So get to see all the great content on there, courtesy of not just the podcast, but also of Insider NJ. And again, just to give you sort of a heads up here with some upcoming guests, folks, we have coming up next Thursday, we have State Senator Loretta Weinberg, the Senate Majority Leader in Trenton, in New Jersey State Senate. She'll be on next week. And a special start time, folks, of Politically Direct next Thursday night will be at 6 p.m., not our normal time of 8 p.m., it'll be a special start time of 6 p.m. We'll have State Senator Loretta Weinberg on there on the show. And, of course, the following week on Thursday night, May 24th, at our regularly scheduled time that we have at 8 o'clock, we'll have Christian Fuscarino, the Executive Director of Garden State Equality, will be joining the program, folks. And if you're not familiar, Garden State Equality is the state's leading LGBT advocacy group and nonprofit organization. So some great guests coming up here in back-to-back weeks. Again, next Thursday night, a special start time at 6 p.m., State Senator Loretta Weinberg, former lieutenant gubernatorial candidate back from 2009, of course, the state senator in the Bergen County area. Again, next Thursday night, special start time of 6 p.m., and coming up on May 24th, we'll have Christian Fuscarino, the executive director of Garden State Equality, on that evening. So, folks, you know, again, we got some great guests coming up here, had some great guests before. Hey, that's what I take pride in, and bring you the best guests here on this program. And, folks, again, don't forget to check out Insider NJ by going to www.insidernj.com for the best coverage of the entire political scene here in New Jersey. When you go on the main page, just click the subscribe button to the Morning Intelligence Briefing. It's delivered conveniently free of charge every single morning to your inbox. So whether you're having breakfast, working out, maybe you're on your smartphone or your tablet, or maybe you have your notebook or your Mac next to you when you're doing these things, check it out. It's convenient, free of charge, delivered to your inbox each and every morning, courtesy of Insider NJ. Again, www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to start your day with Insider NJ. Folks, again, whether it's on your morning commute, getting a daily workout in, walking your dog, doing laundry, for my students, both past and present, now that final exams are history and you get to relax a little bit before summer session or just enjoying the summer in general, hey, take a break. Go on your smartphone, your tablet, your PC, your Mac, tune in, and you'll be happy that you did. And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, it's real, it's here, it's politically direct. Good night. Hey, Fanwood, New Jersey, great little borough and great municipality in the heart of Union County. Folks, again, as I said at the top of the show, I want to wish everyone listening tonight a very happy Mother's Day. A shout out to my mom, the foundation of our family, and also a shout out to my aunt and my grandmother, who is 99 and an incredible inspiration to our family here. So a shout out to the moms in my family. Shout out to all the moms in your families tonight, ladies and gentlemen. And let's honor our moms. Let's make them happy, not just on Sunday, but each and every day. So again, happy Mother's Day to all the great ladies out there listening tonight here on Talk Radio. I'll see you next week, folks, here. Again, a special start time of 6 p.m. with State Senator Loretta Weinberg on the show. I'll see you next week here, folks, on Blog Talk Radio. And don't you dare forget, let's keep on talking.